Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I think it shows that oil companies are losing interest in the Arctic.
Exxon says it does not plan to expand its oil drilling in the Arctic. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 17th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, electric vehicle owners in Alaska are enthusiastic and their numbers are growing quickly.
The only maintenance I have for the car is to put windshield washer fluid in it, and that's it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
ExxonMobil told shareholders last week the company doesn't expect to expand its activities in the Arctic. Exxon has been a major player in Alaska since the dawn of the state's oil industry. In a shareholder proxy statement, the company said it plans only relatively limited investment to sustain its existing Arctic interests. Those include a stake in some of the largest oil fields in Alaska, like Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk, and Exxon owns a 21% share in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Environmental groups trumpeted the news as a sign that next year's lease sale in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge will be a bust. Tim Woody is a spokesman for the Wilderness Society.
I think it shows that oil companies are losing interest in the Arctic and recognizing that it's a bad investment and it's bad business.
The Wilderness Society, the Sierra Club, and other groups have been trying to make the Arctic unattractive to oil companies, in part by pressing major banks and insurance companies not to support industrial activity there. Kara Moriarty of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association says Exxon's statement does not indicate any change in the company's strategy for the region.
And it does not say that they have no interest, because if they had no interest, then their assets would be up for sale.
A law Congress passed in 2017 requires the federal government to hold a second lease sale in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge by the end of next year. The first generated few bids and only a fraction of the revenue that was projected. The only bidder that has kept its leases in the refuge is a state-owned entity, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. After some record-breaking winter snowfall, Alaska is now approaching the start of summer wildfire season. Much of the state still has 2 to 5 feet of snow blanketing the ground, but as Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports, that won't necessarily deliver a calm fire season.
It's hard to forecast fires, and Allison York, coordinator for the Alaska Fire Science Consortium, says while a heavy snowpack may push back the start to the season, it doesn't have any impact on how intense fires will be.
None whatsoever. There is absolutely zero relationship between snowpack, certainly at the statewide level, and subsequent fire season severity.
York says that's because the key fuel that burns in Alaska wildfires is plant debris called duff. And duff doesn't retain moisture from snow.
Debris that falls from the forest, and also the moss and lichen and the little surface plants, when they die, they don't decompose very readily because the soils are so cold. That stuff burns, and it can dry really, really quickly.
As climate change has progressed in recent decades, York says Alaska's fire season is growing longer and burning more acres in more parts of the state.
It's moving out into locations that maybe saw a little fire in the past, but now are seeing really a significant fire load. So, for instance, what happened in southwest Alaska last summer, you know, there's always been a fire history on the Kenai Peninsula, but it seems like that's increasing.
Beth Ipson, spokesperson for the Bureau of Land Management Alaska Fire Service, says an increased fire risk requires new strategies.
Fire management is evolving. We've actually added additional people to concentrate on what we call fuels management and helping communities become resistant to wildfires.
Ipsen says before fire season is in full swing, it's important for homeowners to clear dead vegetation away from their properties, clean out gutters, and move firewood stacks away from buildings to reduce the risk of damage and make it safer and easier for firefighters to battle a potential blaze.
Just because we see a lot of snow on the ground now, that doesn't impact the overall fire season. And that's why it is so important for people to check their property, to take those steps.
As demand for firefighters nationwide increases, hiring becomes a struggle every year. Ipsen says a retention incentive paid through the 2021 federal infrastructure bill is helping with staffing, but the fire service is still hiring for support staff. BLM, the State Division of Forestry and Fire Protection, and the U.S. Forest Service work together every year to tackle fires all over Alaska. Ipsen says they're finishing up training and expect to have the first crews ready to go this week. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Juneau's cruise season kicked off today when the Norwegian Bliss arrived in port. The COVID-19 pandemic disrupted tourism in Juneau for years, but as KTOO's Anna Canny reports, this season is slated to see cruise ship passengers return with a vengeance.
City tourism manager Alexander Pierce says Juneau will see visitors return at full force this year. They're expecting roughly 1.67 million people to arrive between April and October.
We're looking at 30% more visitor volume, which is a massive jump. We've never seen an increase like this before. So I don't think any of us who are close to the industry really know whether it's going to just be completely crazy and really overloaded or whether it'll be okay.
Cruise industry as a whole has moved towards larger ships and more packed schedules. That shift will bring more and more tourists to Southeast Alaska. Elizabeth Arnett works for the nonprofit Travel Juneau. She says a robust return of the cruise industry will be a relief for business owners. But bigger crowds could also mean new disturbances for residents.
It's so exciting to have a thriving tourism community again, but that's not necessarily the case with people who aren't involved in it and who are directly impacted.
The challenge for both city officials and tourism advocates will be finding a sustainable volume of tourists. But there's no certainty on where that number falls. And limiting the number of cruise visitors is hard for a community that relies heavily on the industry's economic benefits.
Where's the stopping point, and how do you even make a stopping point in the kind of economy that we live under? You know, if we start trying to put our foot down with the cruise industry, when do we step too hard and they just back away?
To get ahead on the ever-growing cruise industry, the City Assembly did pass a 5-ship daily limit earlier this winter. But that won't take effect until 2024. In the meantime, tour managers and downtown businesses will have to figure out new ways to manage crowds and entertain visitors.
We'll be tested this summer for sure, and we all pray that it comes out on the plus side, because if visitors stop having a good experience here, the ships will take notice.
And Pierce says that many of the most popular tourist attractions are already reaching capacity. Mendenhall Glacier, for instance, has struggled with overcrowding for years. Plans to upgrade visitor facilities at the glacier have been under development since 2019, but it will be several seasons before construction can actually begin. And some of the region's existing excursions don't have much more room for growth.
We're feeling like we're kind of busting at the seams on whale watching right now. It feels that way on helicopters. So the biggest thing we can do is shore excursion capacity.
The city hopes to use 2023 as a test run for larger visitor numbers, to understand where crowds have become too much to handle and where opportunities for new tourist attractions exist. Pierce says the city hopes to conduct a borough-wide study on the subject.
To look at the community and where we're already seeing pain points, and also to kind of give our local businesses, our local tour operators a sense of, you know, where and how they can grow in a way that is vetted through a public process.
The money for that study would come from marine passenger fees, which are collected from cruise visitors. But funding is dependent on the approval of the city's 2024 budget, which is currently under review. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Still to come in Alaska News Nightly, a stowaway opossum sows division in Homer.
It just kind of felt like a shared moment that everyone got to engage in, no matter which side they were on.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Ketchikan's Borough Assembly is set to vote tonight on an ordinance that would require owners of short-term rentals to secure free annual permits. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, it's part of a larger effort to track how these types of rentals are affecting Ketchikan's housing market.
Ketchikan has a housing problem. There's a lot of demand, but supply is running short, and it could even be driving residents away. Officials have been exploring the problem for years, trying to find ways to make housing more available. Officials say short-term rentals, like those listed on Airbnb and Vrbo, could be playing a role in shrinking what's out there. It's a topic that's been discussed both nationally and around Alaska. Right now, it's hard for borough officials to keep an eye on those rentals. They don't need a permit from the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, which limits how much officials know about the properties. Ketchikan's assembly will discuss an ordinance that could change that by requiring owners to apply for a free permit from the borough. Richard Harney is the borough's planning director. He says the ordinance would help Ketchikan track these numbers the same way other communities have.
We don't know where they are. We don't know how many there are. We have an idea of how many there are. They're supposed to register for sales tax. Some of them do. We're not quite sure how many of them actually are paying their sales tax and registering for, as a business.
The ordinance defines a short-term rental as a dwelling where someone transient stays for less than a month without the owner living on the property. The permits would be free and need to be renewed once a year. It's similar to one that was voted down last December, minus a largely unrelated section that would have laid out rules for properties that don't meet the borough's land use code. Harney says the permitting push is not about trying to push out vacation rentals. It's about balance.
So we recognize the value of these short-term rentals. However, we do have a housing shortage. We do need to get a grasp of and an understanding of what our housing market is actually doing. And in to do so, we need to identify what all of the pieces are to that puzzle.
A second ordinance also is being presented as an option. This version would not require annual renewals.
We're bringing it back with two different variations. One with the yearly expiration date, which has been recommended by the Planning Commission now twice. And then we also have a substitute ordinance, which strips out all of the strips out that yearly renewal, and it's just a perpetual permit, administrative permit.
Assembly members are scheduled to debate the ordinance and take the first of two votes on the measure on Monday. In other business, the Assembly will consider asking borough staff to write an ordinance that would remove the senior sales tax exemption on alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana products. Assembly members Judith McQueary and Glenn Thompson are sponsoring the measure. They submitted a written statement saying that senior tax exemptions are, by and large, helpful for necessary expenses like utilities and food, but that alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana shouldn't fall in the same category. McQueary and Thompson argue that nixing the exemption could spur seniors to make healthier choices. The ordinance would not change any other senior sales tax exemptions or the rules of who qualifies. People age 65 or older who have lived in Ketchikan for at least half a year without more than 2 years spent out of town. If a majority of the assembly greenlights the concept, it'll return for an initial vote at a future meeting. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The Biden administration is proposing strict new pollution limits that would require up to 2/3 of new vehicles sold in the U.S. to be electric by 2032. The proposal announced Wednesday by the Environmental Protection Agency could pose challenges in Alaska, where EV infrastructure is minimal. The state is home to a small but rapidly growing community of electric vehicle owners. Alaska Public Media's Michael Finelli took a ride with one EV owner to learn how the car handles Alaska's harsh winter conditions.
Kelly Willett just finished her workday as a medical assistant in Anchorage and is heading back to her home in Eagle River on the Glen Highway.
And then, of course, like the acceleration onto the highway is nice. Ooh. So that's probably my favorite, one of my favorite.
Willett's 18-mile commute is a lot more enjoyable since she bought a Tesla Model Y 6 months ago. She saved for more than 10 years to buy the car. She's been interested in the sustainability movement since studying biology in college, but Willett says she was also just tired of the maintenance costs for her Subaru.
I don't regret it. It's been a great car so far. I like the technology and the ride and that there's no maintenance. The only maintenance I have for the car is to put windshield washer fluid in it, and that's it.
She sees her Model Y fitting seamlessly into her Alaska lifestyle. Willett fat bikes, ice climbs, and hunts, often with her dog Nala, who's currently laying in the back. In her garage in Eagle River, she shows off the several covered compartments in both the back and front trunk, where an engine would normally be.
And then the side buckets are giant. It's just a huge amount of space.
Willett is part of a rapidly growing number of Alaskan EV owners. Chugach Electric Association estimates there are more than 2,300 EVs on the road in Alaska. That's still a tiny percentage of the total cars, but in Anchorage alone, the number has more than doubled in the last 2 years. Dimitri Shane is the executive director of the Alaska Electric Vehicle Association, a nonprofit that advocates for EV infrastructure in Alaska. He says electric cars are the next evolution of driving.
People often like to connect electric vehicles to like the environmental movement, but I think at a certain point there's a realization that the reason that electric vehicles are becoming popular in mainstream is because they offer something else, and they offer comfort and utility, and they're just fundamentally better vehicles.
But Alaska's famously long and frigid winters can be problematic for EVs. The batteries don't work as well in the cold. Shane says cold can deplete some electric vehicle batteries by more than 30%. But since modern EVs average about 250 miles of range, he says that loss usually isn't problematic, especially for daily commutes.
When driving a car during summertime, I can go probably 3 days without plugging in my car at home to charge overnight. And driving in the wintertime, I have to plug in either every day or every other day, depending on how much driving I have done and how cold it is.
He compares plugging in his car to charging his phone at night. It's that easy. Of course, charging that big battery does increase your electric bill. But Chugach Electric Utility estimates it's less than half the cost of the gas to fill an average car. Sean Scaling is a senior manager of business development at Chugach. He says EVs are also responsible for about 60% less carbon emissions, even though the utility still relies on mostly fossil fuels to generate electricity.
So electric vehicles put the majority of the inherent energy that's stored in the battery into forward momentum. Whereas a gasoline vehicle, there are some estimates, and it's quite a range, but let's just say like 25% of the inherent value of the fuel, energy value, goes into moving the car. And the rest of it, a lot of it is just waste heat. So the vehicles themselves are just so much more efficient.
Attempting a long-distance trip, especially in the winter, can be a challenge, since the state only has a handful of fast chargers along the rail belt. But Scaling says there are more than you think. He says a colleague drove 1,200 miles across the state on a recent weekend.
He went Anchorage to Homer to Fairbanks, Glen Allen, back to Anchorage, all in a weekend. He used 10 high-speed chargers. I mean, it's just evidence that I think we're more ready than most people realize.
Scaling says there are currently 12 active fast chargers on the road system, but many more are on the way thanks to $52 million in federal infrastructure funding. In Anchorage, I'm Michael Finelli.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Sexual violence affects nearly every household in America. If someone you love has experienced sexual assault or abuse, it can be a lot to handle. Reach out to the National Sexual Assault Hotline today to learn how to support someone you care about. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
The world's largest flying salmon took its final swim upstream today. KSTK's Sage Smiley went to greet Alaska Airlines Salmon 30 Salmon in Wrangell on its ceremonial last flight.
Salmon 30 Salmon 2, a 91,000-pound plane painted with a 129-foot king salmon design, flew from Seattle through Southeast. The route, known as the Milk Run, stopped in Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, Juneau, and finally onto its natal runway in Anchorage, where the design was first unveiled. Travelers boarding the flight received shirts, hats, and other swag, including a free airline ticket, according to airline spokesperson Tim Thompson, who was on the flight. Thompson said passengers included 30 Alaska Airlines employees, who were selected from more than 800 who applied for the opportunity to ride on the ceremonial flight. Thompson clarified the flying salmon may still be in use for another few days, but that this was its ceremonial last flight, and it will be repainted soon. In a written statement Monday, Alaska Airlines said it looks forward to unveiling an incredible new design soon that, quote, celebrates the culture and people of Alaska and our connection to the places we fly. Photojournalist Brandon Ferris first announced the retirement of the giant salmon on Twitter in late February, citing an internal company post. Alaska Airlines then confirmed to the Alaska Beacon in late February that the Salmon 30 Salmon 2 jet would fly its final ceremonial flight before being repainted. The news came as a blow to some aviation enthusiasts who circulated a petition that garnered more than 2,000 signatures to save the intricately painted livery. Trident Seafoods bid goodbye to the salmon in a Facebook post just as it began its final flight Monday, saying the plane has been a visual commitment to seafood sustainability and responsible fishing practices. Alaska Airlines debuted a salmon-painted plane in 2005 with the first rendition of the Salmon 30 Salmon. The name for the design came from an incident in the 1980s when a bald eagle dropped a salmon on an Alaska Airlines flight. The original fish design was painted over in 2011, and the airline debuted a new Salmon 30 Salmon 2 design in 2012. The updated design was produced in partnership with the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, which promotes Alaska seafood products worldwide. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
There's a wild possum in the Homer area, and not everybody is upset about it. Many, including the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, want it dead. That's because the possum, or more correctly, the opossum, is an invasive species. On the other hand, it's just weird enough for some Homerites to rally around. They've named it Grubby. A free Grubby hashtag has been making the rounds on social media. Megan Pacer with the Anchorage Daily News wrote about the Grubby saga recently, and Pacer says, as far as anyone can tell, it's not like Grubby the possum even wanted to come to Alaska.
So this opossum, apparently, made its way to Alaska on a shipping container from Washington State. We don't know exactly where in Washington State, but it turned up in the back of a shipping container that Spinard Builder Supply in Homer had ordered. It just had supplies in it. And as they were unloading the supplies, that's when they saw it in the back of the container and thought, okay, what do we do? And they called the shelter and it all kind of unraveled from there. But yeah, little guy or gal made it all the way from Washington State.
I don't want to guess like what the reaction was, but I'm sure it was something like, hey, that doesn't belong here, right?
Pretty much, yeah. From what I understand, because I spoke with the director of the animal shelter in Homer, they were contacted. SBS staff basically said, what do we do here? This isn't normal. And from there, the shelter staff called the Alaska Department of Fish and Game because they weren't sure what to do there. And that's when Fish and Game advised, well, hey, it's not great that it's here. It's an invasive species. If you could try and trap it, we will take care of it from there. We'll handle it. And so the opossum, according to the director of the animal shelter, was initially trapped but managed to escape and has been on the lam ever since. And that's kind of when the hubbub started.
Yeah. So what's the problem with an opossum being in Alaska? I mean, it's not, you noted in your story, you're not allowed to own them as pets. But, you know, this is just like one that randomly made it here. So what's the big deal with that?
Sure. I guess you could argue it's not the biggest deal in the world. But what Fish and Game told me is that it is an invasive species. And with any invasive species, there is a serious connotation with that. They don't want non-native plants or animals to be messing with native flora and fauna in Alaska. So some of the specific concerns Fish and Game shared with me were that possums could potentially be preying on local birds, native birds to the Homer area. you know, if it was a female opossum that happened to be carrying babies at the time, you know, I was told the last thing we want to do is start a population because that could grow and really kind of start to wreak havoc. And another big concern was that opossums could spread diseases to local wildlife.
The dispute now is that Fish and Game wants to catch this animal, to be clear, to get rid of it. And then there are some folks in Homer that are like supportive of this possum. So tell me about that.
Sure. So to back up just a little bit, it actually showed up at the end of March, and it wasn't something that was broadly known in the community until it had escaped. And then it was spotted running around near the police station on Grubstake Avenue. And so the police department, in kind of a funny PSA, posted on Facebook, "Hey, if someone's missing their possum, we just saw it run by." That is how it got its name, Grubby, because it was seen on Grubstake Avenue. And at that point, the division really started. The shelter direct me told me that it had completely divided the town. There was pro-Grubby people and people agreeing, yes, you know, this is invasive, this is an issue. And it really mostly played out on social media. Businesses got in on it. There were sales being advertised. If you come into our establishment and mention free Grubby, you get 20% off. There were people selling t-shirts. There were flyers, Grubby for mayor, Grubby for president even. So, you know, one person I talked to surmised maybe this all has to do with cabin fever. People are still in the throes of winter. They need something to do. People really got galvanized over this little invader. And yeah, people absolutely disagreed on what to do with it. And I guess I should mention, Fish and Game is not actively out searching for this animal. There's not a hunt on for Grubby or anything like that. They basically said, you know, it's not great that it's out there. If it were to be trapped and presented to us, we would handle it. But it's not high enough on their list of priorities to go out seeking it.
Yeah, gotcha. That's a good point. Yeah. And I guess, I mean, even if they did find it, it might just play dead or something, right? That's what they do, I hear.
True, they do that. And, you know, Fish and Game also said that the problem would resolve itself if it expires naturally out in the wild. You know, they said they're not quite sure how long an opossum this far from home could survive on its own, especially with it still being winter conditions in Homer. So it's just kind of out there. We're not sure exactly what has happened to the opossum itself, but it definitely kind of took on a different life and a different meaning for the community of Homer, just as something to kind of rally around, to collectively partake in. It just kind of felt like a shared moment that everyone got to engage in, no matter which side they were on.
That was Anchorage Daily News digital audience producer Megan Pacer, who wrote about a possum in Homer named Grubby. You can find her full story at ADN.com. That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly, and this is the song we trot out every time we have a possum story. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin, Kavitha George, and Michael Finelli in Anchorage, Anna Canny in Juneau, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, and Sage Smiley in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.